The past.
Skeletons in the closet.
The present.
Demons in the Vatican.
The future.
And aliens in the Wild West.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make it my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my
close-up. May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to brand new reel of COL Movies. This is reel number 38, and I'm Jeff, and I must introduce my fortuitous co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How you guys doing?
Good.
Well,
yeah. Shoveling myself out.
Yeah, I might have to do that tomorrow. Mm. Or maybe not, because I live in an apartment.
I'm not. down here. It's, no offense, you guys.
Hey, I'm not that far north from you.
I'm not, you know, I choose to live here, so I just have to deal with this every once in a while. It's been 10 years since we've had a really bad, bad storm, so.
And Austin's freaking out because of, it's going to be a little bit cold and there's going to be a little bit of snow.
Yeah. And you can't blame it on me this time.
Yeah, I love it because it's so funny seeing Austinites freak out with a little snow and a little ice.
Every time I've gone to Austin in the winter, it snowed.
Aww.
I don't know.
Well, we will be getting some rain. So, you know, rain is our Florida equivalent of snow. So we'll get some of that nastiness.
All right. So let's get on to the news. Start off with the news. Superman is found. Woo! And I feel old. I feel so old that because Superman, the next Superman is younger than I am.
All right.
Henry Cavill.
Cavill.
He plays Charles Brandon on Showtime's The Tudors. He's going to be playing Superman and his alter ego, Clark Kent, which is a silly way of saying Clark Kent, Superman. You know, why didn't they just say Superman?
I don't know.
Do they really have to specify that he's also playing Clark Kent?
I guess. They think people are stupid.
But you would think, you know, we've got these iconic Superman movies way back from the late 70s, early 80s with Christopher Reeve. And we've had Superman Returns. We've got all the Superman this, that, and the other. There's a crap ton load of Superman. So people should know by now that both Clark Kent and Superman are the same exact guy. So why say Clark Kent, Superman? Just say Superman. Seriously.
Yeah, I don't see it quite yet on him yet. Because, I mean, the iconic hair kind of isn't on him yet. Because in that picture they have on Yahoo, he's got the surfer dude hair. So
he's got scruffy beard and
yeah.
I know
they'll do him up, but I don't see it yet. So we'll see. You know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is probably like his what do they call it?
Headshot.
There you go. You know, he goes to auditions. This is what he gives the people who he's auditioning for. So I get, and the thing is, I can see it. I actually can see it with the hair, because there was a time when Clark had longer hair. There was a period where Clark Kent had a ponytail, and Superman actually had kind of more long, flowy hair.
In the 60s?
No, actually, in the 90s. This was actually when he came back after dying. When he returned, he ended up sporting a longer hairdo.
Yeah.
Well, so, now I'm interested in seeing who they cast for Lois. If this will be a Lois movie.
Well, they got to have Lois Lane. I mean, you just can't have a Superman movie without Lois Lane. I would like to see a movie which has more Jimmy Olsen in it, where it's actually having the buddy of Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen running around the city most most of the time. Jimmy's just basically her photographer during the entire time, which is mostly what he is in the comic books. So,
yeah. Well, harken back to the first Superman movie, kind of that vibe of it.
We'll see what this is like. It will probably be much more action-packed. It'll be very different than the Christopher Reeve movies, for sure.
Yeah.
For one thing, is honestly, from the Christopher Reeve movies, I love them. I think they're fantastic, at least the first two. First two and two and a half, I should say. Because I like Superman 1. And I like Superman 2 Richard Donner cut. Mm. After seeing the Richard Donner cut and having compared it to the original cut, the theatrical cut, you might say, I actually really like the Richard Donner cut so much better than the theatrical cut. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that Marlon Brando is in there a lot more.
Maybe I agree. I like the Donner cut better, and Christopher Reeve will always be kind of like, he will always be my Superman just because he's the first one I remember seeing on screen. So,
you know, he's one of the best Supermen, but the only thing is I absolutely hate his Clark Kent. I really dislike that Clark Kent. I can't speak. My favorite, who actually did both very well, and I really, really liked both of them, was Dean Cain.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Lewis and Clark. He's the best because he did Clark Kent so well. Clark Kent was just a mild-mannered reporter, meaning really mild-mannered. I mean, there was nothing to kind of show him off or anything besides, you know, like he might have great reporting skills, so he gets these great headlines and everything, but he's just your everyday Joe. That's the kind of the persona of Clark Kent, and he pulled it off well. He wasn't this klutz, because klutz really ended up giving a little bit more attention than he really had. It is an exact opposite of Superman, but there's this thing where he's not necessarily supposed to be the exact opposite of Superman. He's just supposed to be a nice guy every day, someone from the backcountry. He's not a klutz. He's just, you know, he might have his moments, but I mean, it's just like everybody else. He's just a normal, everyday, average Joe. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why I liked his Clark Kent better than the Christopher Reeve Clark Kent. I do have to say that the George Reeves Clark Kent and Superman were awesome too. I just prefer Dean Cain.
The manic depressive Superman.
George Reeves wasn't manic depressive.
Didn't he try to kill himself?
Well, maybe the actor, but not the when he was acting as Superman. But
yeah,
that's beside the point.
Yeah, bad joke gone wrong. Anyway, speaking of the guy who made Clark Kent the way you don't like him, I just thought it was funny that this headline popped up after I put the Superman was found thing in the news. The old Superman producer has been found as well. You pronounce that Ilya? Ilya? I don't know how to pronounce
Ilya?
That.
It's probably, Ilya. It's probably Ilya.
Ilya. Ilya Salkin, who's the producer of all the Christopher Reeve Superman films. I guess he went missing in Mexico sometime Sunday night, and he's been found alive in the country. So no other details. Maybe he was just on a crazy bender, you know, but I just thought it was hilarious. It was the first headline I saw after I posted the other Superman story. So I was like, oh, I got to put this in there. So we have found both our new Superman and our old producer.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Speaking of remakes, Stephen King has 10 things that he knows about the remake of The Stand. He puts an article in Inside Movies on EW.com. And I kind of like how this goes. And the way I feel that he feels about this, about the remake of The Stand, is he's like, eh, whatever. Here's the, like, almost as if he's like a fan of a fan of The Stand instead of the person behind the stand, you know? The way he writes it, and it seems like, they go ahead, do it, but here's some things that, here are some thoughts about The Stand.
I don't know if you want to go through all these. There were some in here that I thought were particularly funny. Well, one thing is he really loves Gary Sinise, who played the lead in the original miniseries that was on ABC. But he would pick Jake Gyllenhaal as his new Gary Sinise, which I thought was an interesting choice. I could see that, I guess. I don't know how familiar you guys are with The Stand, but I love that he didn't know anything about it until he read about it on the internet.
Right, exactly.
You absolutely can't make it as a 2-hour movie. He says it's a trilogy of films, maybe. Molly Ringwald won't be playing Fran Goldsmith this time. Rutger Hauer is a little too old to play the walking dude, and that's too bad.
So he's kind of like, I like that, but you know what? He's still a little too old.
Yeah, I love that he jumps down and it says Molly Ringwald will probably not play the trash can man either, but Billy Bob Thornton would be cool. Billy Bob's always cool. That would probably actually be a really good choice. They need to write in a lot of heavy metal for the soundtrack. And my favorite one is, and this is for people who are familiar with it, M-O-O-N, that spells you probably won't see this anytime soon. And when you do, Woody Allen won't be directing it, or Molly Ringwald.
See, it just his take, just everything that he says in here just makes me think he's like, I'd like to see what happens here, but, you know, I'm not expecting much. And, you know, let him remake it.
He's just kind of nonchalant about it, you know. I didn't know anything about it until I read about it. But,
Oh, all of a sudden I found that my book is being made into a movie.
Guess you shouldn't have sold those rights away.
Right. That's it right there.
But the nice thing is his attitude towards the whole thing. So
once you do it, what can you do? Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that, my friends, is the news. All right. So that means we're going back into the past. I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back in time. I gotta get back in time. Going back in time, we go back to 1999. I'm gonna party like it's 1999.
So you should have landed with that.
Yeah, I should have done that. Anyways, no, I don't want to be sued by Prince. Anyways, back in 1999, Best Picture for 1999. Was it 1999 or was it 2000? It was probably considered 1999. Yeah, Academy Award Best Picture for
19. All over the front of the DVD that I own.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I actually just got the DVD. I'm like, well, if I'm going to watch this movie, it's considered a Best Picture, I might as well buy the damn thing. And in the meantime, watch Naked Boys Singing, and then I'm getting Star Booty. Anyways, don't worry.
Using all those in the same sentence is just wrong.
Sure. Anyways, Naked Boys Singing was not too bad, by the way. I kind of enjoyed it. It had nothing to do with the cocks. Anyways, the director of this movie is Stan Mendes. Is starring Kevin Spacey, Annette Bening, and Thor Birch.
Birch.
Yeah. Birch. Is there supposed to be an H in there? Because I only see a C.
No.
Oh,
no,
it's just pronounced Birch?
It's just, it's just the whole Middle Eastern. Wow. Central European.
Okay. In any case, they're a family in the suburbs who are definitely not a happy family. It's kind of one of those things where this entire movie is essentially a midlife crisis movie, and what happens to the entire family during a midlife crisis. A guy who's just kind of sick of his job, doing the same thing every day, blah, 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 pandering to the man, and then finally snapping and basically really snapping and hitting his midlife crisis.
Right. Well, the tagline for the movie is "Look closer." So basically the whole theme of this is that, you know, if you look at the surface of everybody that you see, all the characters that you see in this movie, it's all sort of like this really shiny, pretty veneer. But if you look really closely, you'll find out that they're all pretty messed up people. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much their perfect little suburban life is all just kind of hanging by a thread. And once that starts to go, the whole thing just sort of unravels. And, you know.
I have to say that 10 minutes into this movie, I was like, is it over yet? I hate this movie. I absolutely. Really? I was like, I really don't like this movie as it was just starting and starting to get on. And I'm like, oh, my dear God, please kill me. And then eventually, basically once after everybody snaps, basically the kind of the point where it changes from this, you know, finding this where everybody has that external veneer that they're showing off, that something just snaps and everything, it's like that crust is shattered and falls off, and you get this different scenario.
You really see how damaged everybody is underneath veneer. Yeah.
And they become actually pretty interesting. And by the end of the movie, I'm like, I have no idea whether I like this movie. Because it's like, by the end, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And this, that, and the other, I might go into a little bit later, but these things happening. But I then flash back to the beginning of the movie and I'm still, I hate that. I just hate that part. I just don't like it. The only thing is, I don't think the second half could be there without that first half. So it has to be there. It's like, I have to hate the first part and then like the second part. I don't get it, but that's kind of my reaction to this. I think I might like this more the more I watch it. So I've only seen this once in my lifetime, and that was just last night after I got home from work. And so I'm thinking that if I watch it a couple more times, I might get more into it, or I might dislike it more. I don't know.
I find it so funny because this movie really, to me, is one of the few movies that had like the perfect use of foreshadowing, because it really, the whole setup in this movie, which the opening scene of the two of them having the conversation in the bedroom, where she talks about her father and how weird he is, and you know, do you want me to kill him? You know, and she's like, would you? You know, that, right. And then the narration starting off with him saying, you know, this is like the day, or the, you know, this is like one of the last days of my life that I'm going to die. So it like had me right there, because it's like, okay, now I got to find out, you know, what happened.
Figure out who's going to kill him. Yeah.
Right. You know,
and how he's going to die is like well, one thing at the beginning of the movie is he tells you that he's going to die. He doesn't say how. So my initial thinking, because again, I never actually saw the movie, I thought he was going to somehow. I thought the idea was like he ends up contracting cancer or some disease. And then as part of that, he's like, I know I'm going to die. So I'm going to, you know, finish my midlife crisis dream.
Go out with a bang.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's what I was thinking was going to happen here. And I mean, there's one question that kind of wasn't answered, but I'm not sure if it really was, et cetera. Near the end, speaking of dying, it's the one thing I really liked was you get this whole idea that she's going to kill her husband, that what's her name is going to kill what's his name. I can only remember Janie's name for Jane's name.
Lester.
So then he's sitting there looking at this picture, kind of realizing how happy he is, how good his life is with his family, how much he loves his family. And looking at this picture, just smiling. And then you see this gun coming into the back of his head, and you're assuming that it's her. And you never actually see who actually pulls the trigger. But later on, you see the neighbor walking away with blood on his shirt, but you don't see a gun. Do we even see a gun that he has?
Well, they do show the gun case missing a gun, so you assume that he had it at some point.
Mm-hmm. And he has blood in his shirt, so you're assuming that he did it. Mm-hmm. And then you see the reaction of the wife, but you never see wife during these scenes. And so yeah. I'm almost not sure. Right.
Yeah.
I'm almost not sure whether she did it or he did it, or if they were both in the same room and she did it or what.
Or you could say even the cheerleader could have done it. Yeah, you know, I mean, like, there's so many.
Well, no, we know the cheerleader didn't do it because we saw that part.
She was in the bathroom when they did the other flashback. You're right. You're right.
So,
but I mean, at the moment, it could have been anybody.
Right.
You know, visually, they set it up where, you know, clearly they were setting it up to make it look like the wife was going to do it because they showed her with the gun before that. So I mean, there's a lot of questions, but ultimately I don't think it even mattered who killed him. Do you know what I mean? In some way, shape, or form, because
they could have pulled an Inception and you never would have known.
Yeah,
it was.
I mean, I kind of thought that that's how it was going to end when I first saw this movie. I hadn't seen it in a long time, so this was my rewatch of it. Mm-hmm. But probably had been, you know, 10 years since I saw it. So, I kind of had forgotten, you know, a lot of that stuff. But when I watched it again and looked at the detail, you know, I was just like, I can't remember if they actually show what happens or if they just do his flashback and it's over. Because it really, you know, it could have ended that way.
Right. No, this movie, this movie holds a kind of a little special place for me. Because this movie, you know, came out in 1999. It won Best Picture. And when I first saw this movie, I just sort of fell in love with it. And I think I watched this movie probably 10 or 15 times after I bought it. I didn't see it until it came out on DVD. So it had already been – it already won the Best Picture. But as strange as this might sound to somebody, especially people who don't really know me all that well, but – this movie actually probably helped me come out. It's kind of weird to think that way, but it did. It the whole relationship between the colonel and his son sort of kind of sparked that in me, I think. Now, it took me another 10 years to come out to my father, but that year was the year that I came out to my sister, who was the first person I told. I mean, it was probably like 2 months after I saw this movie. So I just think a lot of the interaction of the family members and stuff and the whole idea that nobody's perfect, nobody's family is perfect, regardless of what you may see on the surface, really sort of resonated with me at the time. So I sort of took that whole idea and just sort of run with it. And yeah, as weird as it sounds, it sort of helped me probably come out, I think. So this movie has a really kind of special place for me. So that's why I had to put it on the list. But with that being said, there's a couple things that I wanted to talk to you guys about with this one. The year it was nominated, the films it was up against for Best Picture, it's The Cider House Rules, The Green Mile, The Insider, The Sixth Sense. Now, I never saw The Cider House Rules, but I've seen all the other ones. I think everybody was kind of expecting The Sixth Sense to run away with this for some reason.
I thought it would be The Green Mile.
Yeah.
Yeah, because freakiness, if you're, Sixth Sense had everybody in an uproar.
That was a popularity thing, which, you know, the Academy is not necessarily going to go with the popularity of the populace. They're also going to be looking at other things and more of a real film critic, film specialists, you know. I mean, one of the reasons why they have cinematography, direction, and this, that, and the other, because, like, we may think that one movie was great, it looked really good, we thought it was the cinematography, but it really was the editing it was really the direction and getting down to the, I mean, they've got an award for sound mixing. Mm-hmm. This shows you how specialized the Academy is when it comes to giving these awards. So they're going to be looking at other things beyond popularity, just that it's a good movie. It's got to be something. It's got to be a great movie, one that's well done overall. Mm-hmm. And The Sixth Sense was a really good movie. I really like The Sixth Sense, but I can definitely see it not winning an Academy Award.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do we know who won Best Director that year? I should look it up. Hold on. Talk amongst yourselves.
I can't remember. But I would have thought that year that The Green Mile was going to take it. But
yeah, I heard a lot about The Green Mile, and that's more of a thought-provoking movie. It's also a Stephen King movie.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't know that.
Which might be another reason why it didn't win.
But this movie does
Sixth Sense, so I really
American Beauty does follow the formula of sympathetic character, mm-hmm. you know, as they say.
Yep. Well, and it was very smart.
Sam Mendes did win for Best Director.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was up against basically all the people for the Best Pictures, except the only one different was Spike Jonze was nominated for being John Malkovich. So
we should probably put John Malkovich on our list, but even though I absolutely hate John Malkovich, I really hate
him. So yeah, and he's directed quite a couple of films that I've dug. So there might be a couple more of his movies I'm going to throw on the list here.
But to answer your question about, you know, why do you think this film might have won?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think it's the ensemble all portrayed their characters extremely well.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I mean, like, there was no one that didn't fit it. Like, And I had a couple comments about that, which was funny. Like, I kept thinking how Annette Bening looked older than she does now.
Mm-hmm.
She did a good job of making, you know, how Allison Janney, I did not even recognize her.
Oh, my God. No. I recognized her right away. How could you not have recognized her?
No, but at first I was like, hold on, she looks familiar. Hold on, wait a minute. You know what I mean, like, because I hadn't watched it in so long, I hadn't thought about, you know, that being her.
And her character was amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I almost wanted to see more of a backstory of her character. Like, what was going on? Why was she acting this way?
Right.
I mean, what it made me interested in wanting to know more about that family. Yeah.
I mean, all you could assume was there was a little bit of battered wife syndrome in there or something, you know, like because of the bully nature of the father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, she was kind of like shell shocked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So
she was like there but not there, maybe living in her own little personal delusion. That was the whole thing with the bacon. Like, she's making bacon and the guy, he's like, I don't eat bacon. And she's like, oh, like, you know. In her head, she's living like the perfect housewife sort of life, even though her household is a complete mess, a complete farce. And, you know, it's even more on the surface there, a complete farce than any of the other ones, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't, you know, and even though I knew it happened, I'm thinking back to the very beginning, like, I never expected the twist with the Colonel. That was a big surprise. Yeah.
Were you surprised at all by that, Jeff?
The whole scene with space.
With the Superman scene in the rain, basically.
Yeah, right. Because you assume at that point when that garage door opens, he's gonna have a shotgun or something. Right. You know what I mean? The way that they're sitting there and the way, because of all that had just happened. You know, and, you know, you don't expect him to come in and, you know, or you expect he has a knife on him and he's going to go and hug him and then, you know, or something. Right. You have all these impressions that are of what could potentially happen there. And when that happens, it's like, oh, hey,
well,
there's a twist.
Well, one thing that seemed to be a twist, at least to me, was when he did that, I felt like he had already snapped, being like, I just kicked my son out of my house. What the hell I've been doing? I need to see this guy, maybe get an explanation. I thought that in that scene there, he was going to like accuse him for having his son suck his cock and they would have a conversation. Then he would suddenly realize that, oh no, it's not like what he thought. But then he went this other way. And I actually felt that when he left, that he would have gone home and just been like,
killed himself
or,
right.
Or just kind of was in this kind of broken state, being like, what did I just do? What am I doing? Et cetera, being like trying to reevaluate his life as to what it should be. So actually seeing that scene where it looks like that he shot Lester, it kind of threw me off, being like, I actually didn't expect that he would have. I was totally expecting Carolyn to do it, but.
Well, I think all the usual suspects had some sort of motive. It was just a matter of figuring out, you know, which one it was. And, you know, I think it was more of a thing of, well, there's two trains of thought here. The first thought is, you know, he was incredibly vulnerable at that moment and he was rejected.
Right.
You know, from somebody who he thought was of like mind to himself. And then he gets rejected by it. And then I think that rejection turns to anger because it's like, well, you know, you rejected me and now you know.
Right. Nobody can know.
Right.
The nobody can know kind of factor. Right.
Yeah.
I have a reputation to uphold.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, we never actually see that transformation, because the next time we actually see him is him running back into the house with a bloody shirt.
Right.
And seeing that the gun was missing.
Yeah. So, you know, with that being said, you know, it's, of course, Lester's the sympathetic character, but at any point during the movie, especially for you, Jeff, since it's the first time you've seen it, did you ever think that Lester's character was just downright creepy at times?
No, I didn't.
No, not at all. Not with the whole
falling in love
with his daughter's friend. And
I think that was creepy.
I don't. I'm like, I can't believe he's doing that, but I never thought of it as creepy per se.
Well, I think that another reason I think that they did that sort of is that's still playing on it's playing on Lester as far as, you know he's going to die, but why is he going to die? You know, is he going to get caught, you know, having sex with this teenager?
And, yeah, by his wife or by their parents, right. or something like
that. Right.
Yeah.
So this movie is all about throwing all those crazy motives sort of into a pot and sort of just, you know, it's like a random grab bag. You reach your hand in and this is what we pulled out, you know. So it could have, I wouldn't have been shocked if they would have said that they shot like, you know, two or three different endings to this movie, you know, and decided to go with the one they did. But, the guy who wrote this movie, he wrote it. He was inspired actually by, and this is a scene that gets parodied a lot. The scene where Ricky is showing Jane the video of the bag, where he calls it like the most beautiful thing he's ever seen or the most beautiful moment. The writer of the movie was actually inspired. One day he was sitting by the World Trade Center, and there was a bag kind of doing that floating in the air sort of dance, and it, for whatever reason, inspired him to write this movie. So it's kind of interesting that they actually, you know, he purposely sort of wrote that into the film. So it's really kind of a weird sort of meta. Here's the thing that inspired me to write the movie that's in the movie.
It's just something that exists that just goes floating around and just exists.
Well, and I think the idea is where the title of the movie came from, American Beauty, kind of asking the question of what is beauty? and this character was Ricky was able to see, it's just this bag flying around was beautiful in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with that showing that and being like all these little things about what is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name is thinking she's all damn beautiful, having sex is beautiful, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then finding out, well, one, she was a virgin still. And two, she kind of realized what she thought was beautiful was not necessarily she's ugly because she's trying too much to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense whatsoever.
Right. Well, she gets called on that by Ricky, and then she sort of kind of goes off the deep end there. So, you know, because she's like, "I'm beautiful," and he's like, "No, you're not. You're ugly, and you're shallow, and
you're normal.
You know, right? You're ordinary."
Yep.
Yeah. There can't be anything worse than being ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and the other part about this was the fact that the writer was originally intending to write this as a stage play. Do you think that would have worked out?
Possibly. I mean, there would be a lot of things that necessarily wouldn't have, or there could be some interesting ways of showing these different scenes and switching things up.
Yeah, the fantasy scenes would have been a little bit of a challenge, I think.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'm not saying impossible. I'm just saying to convey them.
Lighting.
Yeah.
It's all about lighting. You know?
like the one scene where he's, Lester's laying in bed and she's seeing the girl basically on the ceiling as if, you know, as if she was laying down in a bed of rose petals in this.
Mm-hmm.
Just these few rose petals are falling from her onto him, and which is a beautiful scene, honestly. I really like that scene and how everything is set up and the kind of theme of the rose petals.
Yeah, and I know I really am. I'm really an idiot when it comes to theater. So, do you think it would have garnered the same sort of awards as it got as a motion picture if it was a play?
That's hard to say.
Because yeah,
one of the big things
probably
would be,
wouldn't have had all the actors. Those actors would right. have nailed it.
But. There's Tony Award. I mean, this would essentially be the Tony Awards.
Right.
The Tonys, you know, they're not expecting necessarily all these same actors playing these characters. But they could, if let's say the actors themselves were, if they weren't the same actors, at least the actors of the same caliber, their acting was still, you know, the same well doneness. That
mm-hmm.
make any sense? But the key would be how you would stage it. So it goes back to the director and set designer, and you would essentially be without the cinematographer in that. But how they would stage the play, also how it would be written as a play. Some of these scenes you could easily do by having kind of like this multi-story little thing where you walk up a few steps, you're in Jane's world, Jane's room, and on the other side of the stage is Lester's room. You have this room on there, and it can't all be on the same stage. Like at the end where he gets shot. Well, one thing that makes that scene really well in the movie is the fact you don't see who shoots him. But one way of staging that is by really focusing down is like you have this, have the kitchen set up right there. There in the middle of the stage, he's sitting at the table, and the lights just kind of dim down and stuff until he's just in this spot where he's looking at the picture, and the spot is very, very focused. And if you do the lighting just right, you could have just someone come up and just the gun entering into the spotlight, and everything around is practically black. You can't tell who's holding the gun,
right?
And shoots him.
I don't have any doubt that they could have done the play. It's just a matter of, you know, it almost sounds kind of silly to say this, but I almost want to say that plays that become successful on Broadway, I think they're sort of vetted early on. Like, a bad play doesn't survive very long, you know, on the circuit. So it disappears because it's expensive to produce. And, you know, not that movies are cheap, but I think the people willing to finance movies are willing to throw more money at stuff than, you know, people who finance and set up plays. Right. So
you have the potential of DVD sales. You have the potential of longer term earnings sometimes than you do with plays.
Right.
I mean, so you have residuals. But,
you know. What I get to, though, is that as far as story wise, I think people who go see plays are used to really well written material, you know? So I think it's harder for a particular story to rise to the top when it comes to playwriting as opposed to screenwriting, you know? I don't know if I'm conveying that right, you know, if that makes any sense to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's more of my thought process here was, would it have risen to the top of Broadway and walked away with, you know, 8 Tony Awards?
Yeah, I think it's just tough to say, because I do think, I mean, quite honestly, I think it had to do with the ensemble. You know, was really one of the reasons that it won Best Picture, along with Kevin Spacey, some of the other stuff. Kevin Spacey was amazing. Right. I mean, so they would have had to have just that same kind of ensemble cast, which, I mean, is possible, you know, but I do think it could have been staged pretty, you know, relatively simply. And I'm sure that the writer, once he decided to make it a movie, you know, threw in some more complicated stuff that they could do, clearly.
Right.
You know, but I mean, I think it could have been successful, you know, I mean, like, there's a lot of plays like this, that get put on, you know, and I think it could have worked. They could have found a way, you know, so here's the saying that hopefully it would have done well.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You never know.
Yep. Still time. They could always do it again.
They could.
True.
There's a lot of things that they've been bringing back to, you know, from, you know, movies they're putting back on Broadway and stuff like that. And
hey, Spider-Man the musical.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they're actually doing that.
Yeah. They've been trying.
Legally Blonde did really well.
Right. So, what have we learned? We've learned never to underestimate the power of denial. Mm-mm. Nothing makes you feel more powerful than firing a gun. And it's just a couch. That's what we learned from American Beauty. And I think there's many things that are beautiful. I think that's one thing. One thing I want to comment is one of my favorite moments is when Ricky is looking at Lester's face after he was shot. And Lester's still smiling.
Yeah, he's smiling.
So he died happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was also going to say, if someone asks you to pass the asparagus, just pass the asparagus.
Yeah,
pass the asparagus.
The dinner scenes are some of my favorite in this movie. So,
all right. So I might need to watch it a couple more times, but I liked it. But I didn't all at the same time.
Make up your mind, Jeff. Damn it. It's, to me, like I said, this movie's kind of holds a special place for me. It's truly sort of a modern take on what I like to say the deconstruction or destruction of the modern American family. I probably have lost track of how many times I've watched this movie. So this is one that I can highly recommend. But it's a very sort of introspective sort of movie. So, you know, it's not like a huge party crowd. Everybody sits around and watches it sort of film. So, yes.
And ultimately, I get the point, and I do think the performances are outstanding. Just the only thing I get is it's not my kind of, like, drama, sarcastic, you know, sardonic, whatever you're going to call it. I don't always get, You know, if I'm going to watch a dramatic, like, sardonic kind of movie, I would be more of a Juno guy. Do you know where there's just, where it's kind of just ironic and that kind of stuff? I tend to like that better, but I think this is it's a good movie for what it's worth, but it's not, like, one I would rush out to see. Do you know what I mean? But yep. I get where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
All right. So moving on to intermission. Insert some sort of music here. I haven't figured out what. yeah. So for our intermission, this, if you haven't noticed, at the beginning of every month this year, we're going to be, or just every month, we're going to try to do our little intermissions, our little top tens, top five lists, for you to give you some recommendations on some movies that you should probably be watching. This year, we are going to be talking, or this year, this month, we're going to be talking about the top 10 best picture movies in celebration of American Beauty. So American Beauty, should we put this on one of our top five or top 10? Looks like we've got 15 movies here.
It's on my list. I have my list on the other page.
I put a list of the top ones that I was willing to talk about.
Okay.
So don't pay necessarily attention to this one. This is me writing notes on our page.
On the page? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I gotcha.
We actually kind of start a little list. And you know what? We may not necessarily do this in any particular order, just 10 movies or five or 10 movies. Should we go 5 or 10 movies here? 10, 5?
Yeah. Let's go. Let's see where we go. I definitely call Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, okay. I will agree with that.
Definitely. I actually have never seen Silence of the Lambs.
What?
Wow.
But I have seen Schindler's List, which I think should be on here.
Actually, I've never seen that.
It's actually very, very good.
I'm sure it's great. It's just never come up in my viewing list, so it's one for the list, maybe.
All right. So I would
also throw in The Godfather. Now, there's Godfather and Godfather Part 2 both won independently.
Should we kind of group them together and just say The Godfather?
I'm thinking The Godfathers.
We'll just say The Godfather trilogy in general.
One for me would be Braveheart, which is another one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. I like that one too, Braveheart. I'm going to actually go with just a couple of the things. Didn't Citizen Kane one year? I can't find.
I wouldn't doubt it, but I know it's just known as the best movie of all time. So
yeah, that was by AFI.
Yeah, right. So I don't know if it
didn't win in 1941 or 1942. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, so.
Okay, but so. I would also throw on Gone with the Wind.
Okay.
Classic.
I'm totally going to play the gay card right here and put down The Sound of Music.
Yeah. And if you're going to put down The Sound of Music, you got to put down The West Side Story.
Okay, I will give you that.
Okay.
Jeff's a little perplexed.
Well, also I don't have a list of the winners. I can't seem to find a full list of winners here for some reason. I've got to
go on to Wikipedia.
Yeah, and it's giving me, like, for best picture, it's not giving me the winners. It just gives me winners and nominees, so it's not all nice and tidy. But yeah.
Well, I mean, I can give you guys my list, and if you agree with them or not, you can put them on. We've already got a few of their, obviously, American Beauty is on my list.
Oh, you can't take it with you. I love that movie. Yeah. Actually, I love that play. So
Braveheart's on my list. Silence of the Lambs is on my list. Amadeus is on my list. Annie Hall, The Sound of Music, From Here to Eternity, Casablanca, Gone with the Wind, and It Happened One Night. Those are...
I can't remember It Happened When Not.
Yeah.
I can also say that for just as far as that when I think about the older movies, I think about the ones that have stood the test of time and others have really kind of tried to bite off of. Do you know what I mean? From the very beginning. So like Mutiny on the Bounty kind of started all of that, the pirate stuff, and so many pirate movies have been made, including the pirate movie itself, you know, what came off of that. So I don't necessarily say that, I don't necessarily need to say that that was, needs to be on the top 10, but I don't want us to forget some of those older movies that really set trends. Do you know what I mean? Also, as far as the gay card goes,
Shakespeare,
you know, All About Eve. People can't forget All About Eve. Betty Davis as the diva. So keep that in mind. And then also Ben-Hur was another big one.
Yeah, I've never seen Ben-Hur, so that's why I don't have it. I only picked movies that I had seen, so...
Oh, gotcha. I'd also put One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest on that list.
Yeah, I would put that one on there, too. Cuckoo's Nest and All About
Deer Eve, Hunter.
I would
agree. I'm kidding.
No, I decided to just keep that off. I wasn't even going to mention it. I knew it
Deer Hunter, be. No. I am totally vetoing that.
Now.
Ooh, Gladiator. I like Gladiator. Shakespeare in Love. You know, Titanic's on here, but I refuse to have that anywhere.
Yeah, I didn't even bother.
And it's amazing. Forrest Gump, out of everything that anybody would be joking about that movie, that is an incredible movie.
You know, another amazing thing about that movie? I've never seen it.
Really?
I used to watch it. Wow. Well, yeah. As far as, you know, when it comes to the just personal side of things, like I remember this movie so much. Terms of Endearment was one that I watched with like my mom and my grandma. So whenever I think of Terms of Endearment, I have like this moment. Yeah, that kind of movie.
Were you all crying at the end of it?
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know if it was. I mean, I get why it probably won Best Picture, but I don't know that it's the Best Picture. It's a sentimental Best Picture. Kind of like for you with American Beauty, might be more, you know, more of a sentimental Best Picture. That same with me, you know, that's my Terms of Endearment. And then, you know, you can't forget Driving Miss Daisy. You know what I mean? Like that was.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, goodness.
Well, I've got five of my movies on this list already, so I'm going to leave number 10 up to you guys. So.
And then there's Crash, which I don't actually think should have won Best Picture, but you know, it did bring up a lot of stuff in society at that time and made a huge impact.
Here's a Best Picture I don't know how got won Best Picture was Laurence Olivier's Hamlet. Yeah. I actually have that on DVD and I can't watch even 10 minutes into it. It hurts me to watch that movie because I feel like it's an awful, awful version of that. I kind of want to throw in Ordinary People, which is a very Ordinary People and You Can't Take It With You are two play movies. They were plays in which they made into movies. Ordinary People stars Mary Tyler Moore, Donald Sutherland, and I can't remember who plays the kid. I scrolled away from it. Hold on. Where is the Ordinary People? There it is. Donald Sutherland, Mary Tyler Moore, Timothy Hutton, Judd Hirsch. It's got a bunch of great people in there for it. It might, to some people, might be a little hurt. I mean, this beat out Raging Bull.
Yeah.
Coal Miner's Daughter, The Elephant Man, and Tess for that year. And that was 1980.
Yeah, it would have gone with Coal Miner's Daughter.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
But.
Well, throw it on there. I think we have a good top 10.
I'm going to go with Ordinary People, and that's more of. It's a winner that probably a lot of people just haven't seen, but I really think people should at least experience it once. I actually did a scene of that in my speech in high school. for Speech Team. I did a dramatic interpretation. I just did this one great scene about the kid going, the main kid going psycho at his psychiatrist's office, but realizing it's such a great movie. You got to see it. So I'm going to throw Ordinary People on there as kind of my vote for it. I think we got a good list. Silence of the Lambs, Schindler's List, The Godfather Trilogy, which is technically like three movies, two of which won Best Picture, but still. Braveheart, Gone with the Wind, The Sound of Music, A West Side Story. Boy, aren't we gay. Casablanca, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Ordinary People. So truth be told, how many of these movies have you three, or have you have us three, something like that, not seen?
Of this group, Ordinary People. I've seen all but Ordinary People.
Yeah, I haven't seen Schindler's List or Ordinary People.
I haven't seen Silence of the Lambs, Schindler's List, The Godfather Trilogy. Oh, actually, I've seen Schindler's List. Never mind. Silence of the Lambs, The Godfather Trilogy, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest I have not seen. I do think you guys should check out Ordinary People.
No, put it on the list.
Definitely should. I've already scheduled out a bunch of mine that you haven't seen yet. So I've got a ways before that. But let's move on into the present. Right here, right now. There is no other place I want to be. In the present, we went to see The Right, directed by Mikael Hofstrom, starring Anthony Hopkins, Colin Donahue, something Hines,
Kieran
Hines, and Alice Braga. We talked about this for one of our trailer segments. Mm-hmm. Now we're actually seeing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
We were really excited about it, and
yeah,
we're really excited about the trailer.
Do you want me to boil down my reaction to this film already?
Yep.
I felt the trailer was much better than the movie.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I unfortunately had started hearing some really bad word of mouth about this movie last Friday. So I was out in the city during the weekend, and I was trying to get people to go with me to see the movie. And people didn't want to go see it. Either A, because they had heard bad things about it, or B, because they thought it was scary.
Right.
The movie was not scary. There were maybe some startles here and there, but I didn't find the movie scary at all. To me, this film's biggest thorn in its side is just pacing. It is really slow. Not as slow as The Way Back, but it's pretty slow. You know, mm-hmm. I was hoping for more, I guess, or more, I guess, action, you know, so it really, based on the trailer, wasn't what I expected. Mm. You know,
I would say ultimately it was what I expected it to be. Mm. The pacing was its enemy, the worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that. In the big picture, the exorcism scenes were cool.
Mm-hmm.
The characters were cool. I didn't quite understand Alice Braga's role in this, but whatever. You know what I mean? That was one character I could have done without in this movie. But ultimately, I got where it was coming from and what the whole point of the movie was about. And it really had potential. Really, really had potential. But the pacing of it was what it was just like, oh my gosh, could they just move it along already?
I'm curious, Steve, what did you feel the movie was trying to tell you? What was its message?
Well, I think ultimately that we all go through times where our faith is put into question.
Right.
And that's okay. You know, basically, it's okay to question your faith. You know, that, I mean, it's okay to do that and that kind of thing. But there's got to be a point in time where you just have to let go and, you know, and just honor it. You know what I mean? Right. Kind of like make that decision and go with it, you know, kind of right. thing. But I guess, we all go through those times.
Right. I mean, I guess I walked away with sort of the same message. The only thing is mine was a little tempered with, you know, it's really about losing faith or lost faith and reclaiming it. But it also had this really weird sort of predetermination or fate vibe going in it. Like, especially towards the end where it's like your whole life has been leading up to this point. You know, everything that's happened to you has happened to bring you where you are right now. You know, so that was kind of like just accept it because this is where you're supposed to be. You know.
Well, and you could also look at it to boil it down to as well, like anything can be corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like any, you know, like that's another thing. Like here's a man of God who has fought for him and exorcised demons his whole career and all this kind of stuff who suddenly is a vessel of the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so it's sort of like anyone can be corrupted. You know, so there's several potential themes you could walk away with it from with this movie. But, you know, ultimately, you know, I think that it was set out to be this whole thing about like about the question of faith.
Right.
You know, and what's it all about? And just I mean, also in some ways humanizing priests,
right.
You know, and humanizing the Catholic, you know. The people who are in the leadership of the Catholic Church, you right. know, that we're humans too, you know, like that kind of.
Oh, anyway, trust me. Like yeah. I see. Here's my thing with the. I guess my expectations got sort of elevated with this movie only because I worked for the Catholic Church for 5 years, so I have a very very sort of down to earth look at clergy. And this was when I was a teenager. So, I used to smoke with, you know, a couple of the priests that worked where I worked at, you know, used to go hang out on the back porch on my break and smoke with them. And so I have this really sort of down to earth look at clergy. I don't really look at them as like these holier than thou sort of, well, I do some of them, but I just have a really weird, I have an odd perspective when it comes to the Catholic Church. And, I also love movies that sort of deconstruct and sort of mess with theology, which yeah. I think I was kind of hoping for with this movie, which I didn't get.
It didn't really do that after all. Yeah, I agree with you.
It didn't do that at all because the trailers made it seem like there was like this huge cover up, like, oh, my God, the church is, you know, doing all this stuff. And, you know, they, you know, wanted all these exorcists and it was like, OK, so. Was that just the setup to get you into the movie? There was no real payoff to that, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was another sort of disappointment thing. But, you know, this film is getting sort of blasted by critics. I don't know. I don't think it's a bad movie. I thought the performances were all well. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is Mr. Creepy.
Yeah, he killed it.
Yeah.
You know, he killed it in his as far as his role goes.
Oh, yeah.
So I the criticisms that I'm seeing, I'm not sure I think that they deserve the criticisms that they're getting. But I do think, you know, above all, that this movie was way slow. But I'm not exactly sure what I would have cut out or how I would have cut out. Maybe I would have cut out most of the beginning.
Yeah, but it's 18% Rotten Tomatoes, 54% of users liked it.
I think maybe
I'd give it like 3 stars.
I think I may have would have started this movie with him starting seminary school and
yeah.
rest of the, you know, the mortuary stuff would have been like flashbacks or something, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. That's part of it.
But yeah. So I think that's what I would have cut out for the most part, I think. And, you know, a lot of his sort of introspective stuff where he was kind of sitting around, you know, not doing much. I think I would have cut some of that out, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, ultimately, I don't really have a whole lot more to say about this movie. You know what I mean? Like when we go to, you know, when it comes down to it, I think, you know, like I said, you know, Anthony Hopkins rocked it. I didn't really get why some of the characters were in there. It was slow. Exorcism scenes were good.
Mm-hmm.
Well acted, both by the female and Anthony Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and hell, I would love to take that class. That class seemed like it would be cool, especially looking at all the pictures.
Well, it was like, I was just shocked at like the, you walk into the Vatican, which is, you know, super, super, super old. And, yeah. You know, he turns a couple corners and walks into this classroom, which is like this ultra modern, like
yeah.
stark white lit sort of crazy looking classroom. I was like, whoa, okay, that's kind of cool.
And the teacher has this panel, this touchscreen panel, which is controlling yeah. the screen behind him.
Hey, man, the church has got money, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what else to say about it, you know, really. It was, all I can say is, you know, it wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, and he kind of gives a good message about, you know, to trying to keep the faith, you know.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know, he's questioning his faith and how he gets back into it. And actually really, and the one thing that was kind of a twist of this was, spoiler alert, if we haven't been spoiling before, was the fact that later in the movie, you know, it almost is actually kind of the final confrontation for him, because we keep seeing that bracelet through the entire movie, like each demon-possessed person, somehow you see this bracelet, which is the same thing. He saw it on his mother's hand, saw it on the girl's arm. Mm-hmm. Then he gets it. Then this, that, and the other. So we've got this kind of connection. It's almost like he's been haunted by this demon all his life. And we saw at one point that as his mother died, he was kind of losing his faith, so he bent the cross. When he got his faith back, he
unbent it,
and he, you know, he got his faith, and so it was kind of a triumph against his own demon, right. His own personal demon. Well, so it's almost a metaphor.
I think there was a little bit of misdirection there too, because they were hinting at the fact that this demon had been following him around his whole life. But the note that his mother wrote him, which said he'll always be with you, could be taken as
million different directions. Yeah, it could be the demon will always be with you. Could be, could be God will always be with you,
which is how I took it at first, you know, because it sounded like his family was pretty religious. You either become a mortician or you go to seminary school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of that's where I was going with it. So what that was probably the only real twist was really the realization that she was probably talking about this demon who may have been, you know, with her. It's one of those things where it's like I don't know what they call that. It's a haunting affects one particular person or family and follows them around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds familiar. Like another movie we watched.
Yes, this is an offshoot of Paranormal Activity,
which, by the way, comes out on DVD next week.
Like I said, it wasn't what I expected. I don't know what else I could say.
Well, then let's go into what we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned that Rome is infected by cats. Infested by cats. Rome is also infested with frogs, which is odd considering all the cats. Always turn your phone off before beginning exorcism. And bow your head, keep praying, and good luck! That is what we've learned from the rite. I have to say, maybe a little bit too suspenseful with the pacing. I think that was kind of the reason for the slow pacing. It was like the slow, dramatic progression of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was a decent movie. And I would say definitely watch it, but you probably could just wait till for the DVD to rent it.
Yeah. It's It had such potential to be a great exorcism movie. I think me and Steve were both just like,
yeah,
yeah, this looks like it's going to be awesome. You know, but it just,
I was hoping for the Omen kind of feel, yeah, you know, like
it just kind of fell flat. You know, it was other than the exorcism scenes themselves, it was kind of boring. The pacing was slow. So I'm not really sure I can recommend this, you know, to go out and see. You know, if you want to wait for the DVD, yeah, you can rent it for a dollar, stream it, maybe. You're bored. You're extremely bored, you know. So.
Yeah, I guess ultimately what probably bummed me out more than anything, because I wanted to really enjoy this movie, was because I took my parents to see it with me. And, you know, and so I was like, oh my gosh, the trailer looks so good on this, you know, and I just saw them after the movie and they were both like, and I was like, oh, they're never going to trust me again, you know, but, you know, so I really wanted to enjoy it and I was very psyched by the trailer. You know, again, exorcism scenes were good. However, pace was way slow. You know, again, I don't know what I could have cut, but I would have found something to cut to move it along. That's, you know, but that's that.
Yeah. That's that. And this. 'Cause it's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon. And the future will be like, we're looking at Cowboys and Aliens, starring Daniel Craig, Harrison Ford, Sam Rockwell, and Olivia Wilde. Wow. This is going to be cool. That's all I got to say.
Hopefully. Yeah, it's got potential, I think.
Yeah. It's a Jon Favreau and Steven Spielberg joint. So it would be interesting to see.
Yes, a non-Iron Man Favreau movie, so... Well, it'd be interesting to see where he goes with it.
The one great thing is that while people were saying, make it 3D, make it 3D, make it 3D, Jon Favreau went, no.
Yep. Nope. I definitely think for this movie, if they had gone 3D, it would have just been for the kitsch.
Yeah.
You know, they're I like what he says, which is, you know, Westerns aren't shot in 3D.
Boom. That's true. I bet you know. The Wild Wild West would be in 3D.
Oh yeah, if it came out today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. That's true. I don't know that I call that a Western though.
a giant 3D metal spider.
Yeah.
Mama. Two words.
You know, and I mean, and a lot of what we're hearing from, like, especially from the trivia and stuff, is that, you know, that the trailer is meant to draw you in. So we probably see, you know, some more comedic stuff in the trailer, all that kind of stuff, but they're guaranteeing surprises. They're guaranteeing, you know, more in-depth, you know, stuff in the movie itself. So they're not trying to give all the best parts away in the trailer, like a lot of these movies we've been seeing in the past year, you know.
I agree.
So it sounds like it's going to be interesting. I love the concept, you know, and in some ways I love the fact that this is a schizo movie and they're letting you know that right up front.
Oh yeah. It's in the title.
You know what I mean? Right. Exactly. Cowboys and aliens. We're a schizophrenic movie.
We're going to put Western sci-fi.
Yeah. We're going to put it together and we're going to mix them. So get over it up front. You know,
I can't think of too many other times where that mixture has been a success. What do we got? We've got the Wild Wild West, which was a failure. Westworld. Anybody remember Westworld?
No,
I didn't even see the whole thing.
Oh wow, Westworld is a sort of a cult classic, where it involves sort of like an amusement park set up to be a wild western town, and the robots go all crazy and start killing people.
Oh, have I not seen that?
Yeah, it's from the late 70s, so.
Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Stream? It's not streaming. So,
yeah, not a typical genre mixture that works, I think. So it would be interesting. And the funny thing about this is this really sort of, to me, harkens back to what I think the types of movies Spielberg was doing when he was younger. You know? Mm-hmm. Sort of here's a whimsical kind of mixture, sort of, this is the things I used to pretend when I was a little kid, you know.
Or, these are my film school projects.
Mm-hmm.
like before I actually went live with everything.
Right, you know. Yeah. So for that I am kind of looking forward to this, you know. So
I think it has a lot of potential, and I like the fact that they're upfront with the gag. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I think that's going to be, you know, that it's definitely going to be interesting to see how this all comes to pass.
Right, it's really going to be how they market it. The actual, once you see the movie, I mean, like you said, the trailer's coming off kind of like some of the comedic overtones, but mm-hmm. as long as the actual movie doesn't come off as like being sort of like Mars Attacks sort of thing going yeah. on, I think it'll be okay, you know.
True. Now, what do y'all think about some of the casting choices for this movie? Do you see Daniel Craig as a cowboy?
Yeah, he actually looks very cowboyish to me.
Yeah, I guess I'm having a hard time with it just simply because, you know, I see him and I see James Bond now, so.
Yeah.
I don't really know if I have an issue with any of the casting. The funny thing is, I think the actor that sticks out the most to me is Harrison Ford.
Yeah, if it was Clint Eastwood, you know, versus a Harrison Ford, I'm
mm-hmm.
might be more convinced. But I mean, I don't know quite what that role is of that person, but clearly he's the elder statesman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the trailer. You know, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays into it. But
right, he's playing Colonel Woodrow Dollarhide.
Mm.
Dollarhide, yeah. So. Yeah, like I said, for whatever reason, he's the one that sticks out the most, which is kind of funny because there's this little blurb about him not wanting to wear a hat in the movie, not knowing whether or not that's because of the whole Indiana Jones and the hat thing, but they finally convinced him that, you know, you got to wear a hat because it's like the West and everybody wears a hat.
Western film, everyone wears a hat. What are you talking about?
I just find it so funny that he was just like, I don't want to wear a hat. You know,
well, tough luck.
Yeah, wear it's a Western, you doofus. But yeah, I think I'm cool with the casting for now. I mean, even with Olivia Wilde just coming off of Tron, I don't have a hard time seeing her as the damsel.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just looks like it has potential. You know, and I do find it interesting some of the casting, the previous casting choices. Yeah, like yet again, we see another Robert Downey Jr. was originally picked to play the lead, but couldn't do it due to scheduling conflicts.
Mm.
I think it's about the third movie or so that we've reviewed where Robert Downey Jr. had scheduling conflicts.
Yeah, he's just overbooked.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you know, I thought that was interesting. And I think it's interesting too that they put in here in some of the trivia pieces that, you know, they're citing Alien and Predator as the influence on the look of the aliens. So that'll be interesting to see what they decide to do.
You know, if they look anything like an Alien Predator hybrid, it's going to start off a whole sort of debate in the geek crowd. Yeah, well, I don't even know so much a ripoff, but watch it be like a sort of unintended spinoff.
Yeah,
of the
this is a prequel to the Aliens movie.
Yeah, right.
Aliens in the Wild Wild West, so it must have just been a prequel to Alien.
No, originally they were one distinct species, and then. Clearly, after coming to Earth, something exposed them and split their DNA, you know, so that
girls, one went girls, to you're one both planet. Pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see.
All right. So, with that, I have to say I'm really excited for this one, although I'm expecting more than what the trailer is showing.
Agreed.
Yeah, basically being burned by the right here. I'm excited, and I'm hoping that it's as good as the trailer's hinting.
Yeah. And yeah, it has a lot of promise. I like the idea, and I hope that it comes together. I hope this is the sleeper hit. You know, I hope that we're like going into this with like real sarcastic, I don't know about this. And I walk out of this going like, hell yes. That's what I want to walk out of it. You know what I mean? I want to be like, totally worth it. Totally worth it.
So. You know what I'm expecting? Like, I'm expecting more than the trailer is showing me, hoping that it's going to be good. But, you know, I'm actually half not, wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being an absolutely terrible movie. So my expectations are, you know, I'm expecting more, but if I don't get it, I'm not going to be surprised, if that makes any sense.
So, but, you know, I'm giving credit to the fact, good actors, good director, good producer. I'm hoping.
There's a lot of big guns behind this, so I'm hoping it all comes together. You know.
You know, it's not good actor, one good actor, like we just got off of, you know, for lack of a better term. Anthony Hopkins was the draw for the right, let's be honest.
True.
Do you know what I mean? There was really not anything else in there that drew me to that movie other than him. In this case, you know, we've got a solid cast, we've got a solid director, a solid producer. So, you know, I would hope that they wouldn't put out crap.
So I'm hoping for the best on this one.
Exactly.
All right, so let's talk about, speaking of the future, more of the future of what we're going to be talking about next week. Next week, in the past, we're going to be talking about Barbarella, which reminds me I need to watch Star Booty and send that back so that I can get Barbarella. In the present, we'll be seeing The Roommate. And the future will be I Am Number 4. You can always... There are plenty of ways to contact us. Give us your feedback. What did you think about these movies? We'd love to hear from you. There's plenty of ways to do that. Shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Also, you can leave us a message at 361-COL-TALK. We'd love to play your voicemail on the show. You can also send MP3s or M4As or what have you to the email address as well. Post a comment on our website at movies.cubsoutloud.com. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/COLmovies, which is also posted to our Twitter feed at twitter.com/COLmovies. Also, please go to iTunes and leave a review and rating. Love to read those on the show. So with that, that's it. And with that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Good night, everybody.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst of my ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.
Fuck me, Your Majesty! Fuck me!
it's so just many, a couch!
There's so many good quotes in that movie.